The following talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonnebacher at the Zen Center of New York City. Gokhan is a senior monastic and Dharma holder in the Mountains and Rivers Order. He serves as Director of Operations at Zen Mountain Monastery and also helps run the National Buddhist Prison Sangha. This talk, like all of our talks, is given free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. This is from a teaching by Bodhidharma called The Two Entrances. Noble ones enter the way by many paths, but essentially there are but two. One is by principle and one is by practice. Those who enter by principle become enlightened to the truth on the basis of the teaching. One must have a profound faith that all living beings, common and sage, possess the same true nature. It is merely because of the unreal covering of adventitious dust that our true nature is not revealed. For those who turn from delusion back to the real, forsake discrimination and abide in brightness, there is neither self nor other, neither ordinary being nor sage. Without moving, without effort, you abide in complete and unspoken accord. This is entrance by principle. So this is just the first section of a little bit longer teaching, which is sometimes called the two entrances and four practices. And so the next section is the four practices, which are waiting for future talks, I think. Bodhidharma is kind of a legendary figure in Zen. He is credited with bringing Zen and kind of founding Zen, being the beginning of Zen in China. So he was said to be an Indian monk, or some scholars think he may have been a Persian monk, who traveled to India in the 500s, where Buddhism had already, did I say he traveled to China? He traveled to China, right? Where Buddhism had already been for some hundreds of years, right? It seems very early for Buddhism in China, and yet it had been hundreds of years. So if you think of, we're like 50 years in here, maybe a little more, hundreds of years developing, adapting, practitioners in China trying to figure out, what is this tradition? What are we practicing? How should we practice? And it seems that by the time Bodhidharma got there, already there was kind of the need for some starting over again. The legend is that he arrived and said that Chan, what he taught, is a special transmission outside the scriptures with no reliance on words and letters. It is a direct pointing to the human mind, the human heart mind. And so it's not about studying the teachings, studying the sutras, understanding the sutras, being able to explain the sutras. That's all just ideas, words, and letters. That's all just pointing. It's pointing, but it is not it. It is pointing to the truth, pointing to our own mind, the truth of our own mind. But it's just pointing. Don't get confused, he says. He says it's direct experience. It's right here. It's right now. There is always just this moment. There is always just this moment. Bodhidharma, sort of in the tradition, is very much kind of a figure, a mythic figure. It is said that he had The story is that he had an encounter with the emperor at the time, who was quite a devout Buddhist supporter, practitioner maybe. The emperor was confused or didn't hear what he thought he was going to hear, wanted to hear. Bodhidharma left and went and sat in a cave for 9 years. It said staring at the wall. Scholars say different things about what that means. We'll come back to that a bit. And maybe he invented kung fu. It said that he got sleepy sitting in the cave, and so he ripped his eyelids off, tossed them aside, and where they landed, tea plants grew. So maybe he introduced tea so that we could stay awake while we sit. And so there's all this legend, but there seems to be some agreement among scholars that some person, Bodhidharma, did exist, did teach. There are teachings that are attributed to him or have been attributed to him that scholars question. But this teaching is one of the couple of teachings, this teaching, the two entrances, that there seems to be some agreement that this was his teaching. And this is one, there is a translation of some of Bodhidharma's teachings by Red Pine that's been out for some time. That's a book that I come back to over the years that I have spent some time with. And this teaching I've always been interested in. And more recently, sort of not quite satisfied with, wondered about the translation. I go back to Bodhidharma because I want to know where did all of this start, this tradition that I'm a part of, that we're a part of. What was the teaching back then? What was the practice from the beginning? Maybe some of my question there is, are we doing it right? What should we be doing? How do we do this? So I got the idea that I would look at some different translations of this teaching and create my own based on those different translations. And so that's what I've done. That's what I read to you. We are very much dependent on translators. Buddhism has always been a religion of translation from the time of the Buddha. And there are, I was thinking one way to, we could hear that and be like, and sometimes this is the case, well, that could be problematic, right? That we are so dependent on translators who may not understand what they're translating, right? They understand the words and the letters, but do they understand the meaning? Do they understand for themselves? But this is a live tradition, a live tradition. There's such emphasis in Buddhism and Zen, and that in each generation and for each of us, we have to realize it for ourselves. Right? So using the translations that we have, and we only have what we have, to find for ourselves what is it that they are, that these teachings are pointing to. So I just want to express my gratitude and offer my apologies to the translators that I have used. So again, noble ones enter the way by many paths, but essentially there are but two. One is by principle and one is by practice. Those who enter by principle become enlightened to the truth on the basis of the teaching. One must have a profound faith that all living beings, common and sage, possess the same true nature. It is merely because of the unreal covering of adventitious dust that our true nature is not revealed. So in a way, these lines contain the whole of the teaching. we generally think of, and particularly in Zen, as practice as being the way in. We have to do something. We have to work with our mind, study our mind, train the mind, see the mind. In another teaching attributed to Bodhidharma, he says that we should behold the mind. He said that is, in a sense, all we need to do, is behold the mind. So what is this entry by principle? What is it to be enlightened to the truth on the basis of the teaching? Those who enter by principle become enlightened to the truth on the basis of the teaching. One must have a profound faith. This is the teaching. Have a profound faith that all living beings, common and sage, possess the same true nature. This is the teaching, this very important teaching of Buddha nature. Really pointing to the kind of the heart of the whole thing. This Buddha nature is not something that is created through practice. There is nothing to get. There is nothing that a sage or an enlightened being has that we don't have. We ordinary people. All living beings possess the same true nature. Dada Roshi, my first teacher, used to say, this is one of the things that he would say over and over again, each and every one of us is perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Each and every one of us. Shugen Roshi, recently at the beginning of a retreat, he said, you know, basically this is what Buddhism teaches. You're okay. I'm okay. Each thing we meet is okay. Each thing, just as it is. Can we take that in? Can you take that in? You're okay. You're okay. Just as you are. How does that feel? How is that? How about everyone else? The people sitting next to you? Every person who you meet, just as they are, they're okay. And as Dada Roshi, you also used to say, some may realize it, some may not. Most of us, a lot of the time, all of the time, all of us, all of the time, we don't feel okay. But this is the teaching. This is the teaching. Bodhidharma is saying there is entry. We can enter through faith in this teaching, belief in this teaching. While I was working on this talk, I found an old talk that I guess had been published by Hojin Sensei about trust. And there were some quotes that she was quoting that I found helpful. Master Yuan Wu says, people who study the way begin by having trust to turn towards it. We have to begin with some trust to turn towards it, to practice. As Hojin said, how do we trust what we don't know yet, what we don't understand yet, what we haven't experienced yet? I was remembering when I first encountered Buddhism in college, and that I knew as soon as I read, I took an introduction to Eastern religion. It's like as we got closer to Buddhism, I was like, yes. And then finding Buddhism, yes, I knew. That's what I had been looking for. I knew I was looking for something. didn't know what I was looking for. I knew because it expressed what I was feeling. It acknowledged the suffering that I was in touch with in myself. And it said that there was something to be done about it. There was something to do, in a sense that there was something I was supposed to do to address what I was feeling. That's what I was looking for. Because I knew that too, there has to be something to do. Is that faith, trust in true nature and Buddha nature, without knowing what to call it? And what about faith? You know, in some ways we don't talk about faith in Buddhism. We're not in the way that we shy away from it in, because of the way it's understood in other traditions. I like to say at the introductory weekends at the monastery, we're not asked to believe anything in Zen. You don't have to believe anything. And we kind of do need to have some trust, some faith. But what is that in ourselves, really? Again, not knowing what it is, not knowing what to call it. It's in our own nature, our ability to awaken to that. Is this something that we can cultivate? This trust. Master Dawi says, if you want to study the path, you must have settled trust, so your mind doesn't waver, whether favorable or adverse environments are encountered. Only then, only with this settled trust, do you have some direction on the path. Taira Roshi used to say over and over again, trust yourself. Trust yourself. Those who enter by principle become enlightened to the truth on the basis of the teaching. One must have a profound faith that all living beings, common and sage, possess the same true nature. Dada Roshi used to talk about belief. He used to say, Zen is not about belief. It's not about understanding. It's about realizing. Always the emphasis on our own direct experience. Realizing for ourselves. Because that's what's most transformative, and because that's That's the heart. And yet along the way, we meet the teachings, we study the teachings. Where do the teachings, the words and the letters from other people's experience, other people offering their experience, their understanding, where does our own experience meet our study of the teachings, our understanding of the teachings? And the true teachings are always pointing to our own mind, always pointing, guiding. And so there is this continual practice of process of hearing the teachings, studying the teachings, reflecting on the teachings, and then seeing for ourselves. Right, seeing in our own experience, that may be in Zazen, that may be walking down the street, and maybe when you're studying something, to know for yourself, oh, that's what that means. That's what that means. And then to keep going, to keep practicing, to keep studying, keep clarifying. One must have a profound faith that all living beings, common and sage, possess the same true nature. It is merely because of the unreal covering of adventitious dust that our true nature is not revealed. So why don't we see our true nature? How is it that it's covered over, that we can't see it? Can't see beyond, past, through, what Bodhidharma is calling the adventitious dust. We get fixated on that dust, confused by that dust, all these things that pass through, that seem so important, that seem like they might be who we are. I like to talk about adventitious. I've talked about it before. It's kind of my favorite Buddhist word. It means by chance rather than design. It means not an inherent part of. It means from the outside. And so the teachings are saying all of our emotions, they're adventitious dust. They cover over. They're what we see and identify with. Our opinions are adventitious dust. Our opinions of ourselves, our opinions about other people, they seem so real, so convincing, just adventitious dust. The stories we tell ourselves, about others, all of our habitual reactions, the kleshas, our difficult emotions, confusing emotions, anger and greed, jealousy, pride. And so I find this a really helpful teaching. Something that I can, if there is enough space when I'm upset, or bored, or depressed, or anxious, or caught in a desire, disappointed, if there's enough space to remind myself to say, yeah, but this is just, it's just passing. It's not who I am. I'm experiencing it. It's not that it's not real, right? I'm experiencing what I'm experiencing. It hurts, or I'm uncomfortable, or, but it's just passing. It's just adventitious. It's not who I am. It doesn't belong to me. It's not myself. Because that's the confusion. And it's hard to see this, but in, right, we call it mine, my anger. But is that true? What is it? It's just something that's arising in your body mind. And so in a sense, can we have faith in this teaching and use that, right? The power that some of these emotions seem to have, the power that our thoughts have, our opinions have, the energy that we give them. Well, the energy that they have is really just because of what we give them. It's because of our belief in them. And in a sense, that shows us. That's how we know. Yeah, we're believing. We're believing that they're more than they are. And so these teachings go together, work together. You're okay, just as you are. The things that make you feel not okay, they're real. You're experiencing them. Doesn't help to just try to deny them or push them away, push past them. But they're not who you are. They are not your true nature. They don't belong to you. And they're not real in the way that we think they are, that you think they are. And that makes it hard to trust, to know, to really know that you're okay. That's why life is dissatisfying. But there's something to be done about it. There is a practice. We can see through and, in a sense, uncover. For those who turn from delusion back to the real, forsake discrimination and abide in brightness. There is neither self nor other, neither ordinary being nor sage. Without moving, without effort, you abide in complete and unspoken accord. This is entry by principle. And so I take this as Bodhidharma's meditation instruction. That's what he brought to China, right? Zen Chan means meditation. This is the meditation school. Bodhidharma's example, his lived example when he came to China, was sitting in that cave for so long. What was he doing? And in a way, I don't really know why there's so much speculation about what he was doing. He was doing zazen. He was meditating. He just told us what he was doing. And again, I'm bringing this as my own understanding. But he just said what he was doing. He was turning from delusion back to the real. He was forsaking discrimination and abiding in brightness. Another way to talk about Buddha nature is to say that our nature is originally pure. It has always been that way and always will be. How do we return there? Back from the delusion, back to the real. Can we see all the ways that we turn to delusion? That we turn away from the real? That we're encouraged to do that? Kind of taught to do that? To turn into fantasy and distraction? Do we see how much we do that? In our own mind, of our own creation, so our own worries, our own distractions, our own fantasies, that we create, that we have created. I imagine I'm not unique in having things that I created early on in my life, things that I still go back to. Stories, fantasies, thoughts about the future. Do we think about because they make us feel good now? They do soothe our discontent, our anxiety. That's something to look at to see what do you turn to? How do you disengage when things are too uncomfortable? How have you learned to do that? It does soothe. Lots of things may soothe, but they're all temporary. In a sense, they're all on the surface. They're not addressing what you're wanting to address. Not really. And how much we turn outside to find this to soothe ourselves, are fed things to soothe ourselves with. Everywhere you turn, you're offered something to soothe yourself with, to distract yourself with. And then to see how those go together. I think that maybe that's hard to see, how we, it seems like it's ours, it seems like, and it's like, where did it come from? How these two mix, our own fantasies with the fantasies that someone else has given us. How do we turn back to the real? Find our way back to ourselves, back to where we are, here, back to reality. For those who turn from delusion back to the real, forsake discrimination and abide in brightness, there is neither self nor other, neither ordinary being nor sage. Without moving, without effort, you abide in complete and unspoken accord. This discrimination term that's used in Buddhism is our thinking, naming mind. distinguishing one thing from another, dividing things up. The sounds outside the window, the pain in your knees, the breath moving in your body. That's a necessary, natural aspect of mind. But how is it when we don't call these things anything? What is the direct experience, actually, before the words? Before the idea? He is inviting us to abide in brightness, the natural bright awareness of the mind, of your mind. This is what we're learning in Zazen, what we're practicing in learning to let go and practicing letting go. Master Dongshan talked about not touching, not turning away. Not touching, not turning away. Not getting involved in all of the many things that arise in our body and mind. We can be learning that in Zazen. We don't have to get involved. But we're not turning away. We're cultivating, practicing, being present, being awake, present to whatever arises. See the thought. See the thought. Don't ignore it. Don't push it away. You don't have to get involved. You don't have to do anything with it. Very gentle. Let it pass. Let it go. Not touching. Not turning away. Letting go. Letting go. And returning. Returning to your direct experience. What is that? How is that? Can you trust that? What is direct contact? Just your breath. Not doing anything to it, just your breath. How is it when you truly let go? For most of us, it takes some time. It takes some time. It takes a while to have some experience of that. And all along the way, that's what you're working on. That's what you're cultivating. And all along the way, I think that's what we're exploring, the mystery of that. It is a constant exploration. It is a mystery. And we're not creating anything. We're not trying to create anything. Letting go of involvement, not touching, not turning away. Bodhidharma says, then there is neither self nor other, neither ordinary being nor sage. Without moving, without effort, you abide in complete and unspoken accord. I think I'd like to end with the words of my teachers. So again, Shugen Roshi, you're okay. You're okay. I'm okay. Each thing that you encounter, as it is okay. And one of the things that Dada Roshi used to say at the end of his talks was, please take care of it. Please take care of it. Only you can take care of it.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.